Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by... Finding someone who shares your values in today's culture isn't easy, and being single around the holidays isn't easy either. That's why Catholic Singles created a website and app where single Catholics can meet and get to know each other that focuses on values, activities, and interests. For over two decades, Catholic Singles has been fostering deep relationships because your faith matters. Start today at CatholicSingles.com. That's CatholicSingles.com.
Ignatius Press is pleased to announce the first national book club created for Catholic schools. Ignatius Book Club for Catholic Schools was launched to support Catholic schools' dedication to forming the whole child, mind, body, and spirit. Ignatius Book Club for Schools partnered with leading publishers of children's literature to offer the best books and educational materials for all reading levels and interests. Head to ignatiusbookclub.com/podcast and find wholesome books that delight, inspire, and enrich.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and this hour, joined by Trent Horn. Did I say that? Did it sound mean? One other way I said your name, Trent Horn. I don't mean it to be mean. I'm trying to get at least 15 minutes in the show before I'm mean to you. So I hope I didn't start out mean there.
I hope so. Otherwise, if you did, you didn't even make it 15 seconds.
I know. So I'm going to really try.
I think it was fine. There's kind of an air of mystery and excitement to it.
Oh, like, okay, good.
Said, ladies and gentlemen, Cy Kellett.
Yeah, now you really want to see me or hear me or whatever once you say it that way. All right, so it wasn't mean. All right, so I still have 14 more minutes then before I'm going to start being mean to you. Trent, however, is apologist here at Catholic Answers. I don't know why I put the word however in there. He is a writer extraordinaire, a speaker, a man who goes out and debates people on all kinds of both philosophical and theological issues, a man who began his career as an apologist by actually being an apologist for human life, defending life everywhere he went. And his latest book is a collaborative effort with Layla Miller.
That's right. I didn't even have to help you, so I didn't even have to help you.
You said this. You went, I don't know. There was a brief brain cramp there. I apologize. And that book is called... Go ahead, Trent. No, I'm not asking you that. I know the name of Made This Way.
That's right. It is Made This Way.
I was trying to get you to do it. But Trent Horn, welcome. How are you?
Cy Kellett. It's great to be here on Catholic Answers Live today. So many different ways you can say each other's names, and I don't think that they're offensive or angry at all. So
I just didn't want to blow my new commitment to go the first 15 minutes of every show with you without being...
Is this going
to
be a new year, like a sign for 2019? The best... New Year's resolutions always start 3 weeks early, like 2 weeks early.
Yeah.
I always think you got to get in the...
Why wait?
Yeah, get in the groove now.
It's like getting a running start.
Exactly.
So you're exactly right. That is my... but it's very hard not to be mean to Trent because we are enemies. And it's fair.
Well, this just got dark. there can only... That's true. There can only be one. Highlander.
I wish that I got that reference. I vaguely get that, but I haven't actually seen it, so I vaguely know what you're talking about. But what we're going to talk about this hour on the big radio program that we do is how to be a better apologist for the Catholic faith. And as I said, you started your apologetics, so to speak, basically defending the right of human beings to be alive.
Right. Yeah. So prior to doing Catholic apologetics, I started my work with Catholic Answers in 2012. Before that, I was the Respect Life director for the Diocese of Phoenix, working in the Office of Marriage and Respect Life. And before that, I was kind of a traveling missionary and go to college campuses, engage in dialogue, debates, things like that on campus to help equip. I would also on weekends before going to the campuses, go with our team to churches and schools to train people to be able to defend the unborn and offer good arguments. And through that process, I came to see people needed training and needed tips on all different aspects of defending their faith, not just on a particular moral issue, but on the existence of God, the historicity of the Bible, this why people should be Catholic rather than Protestant, other moral issues. So I'm all about giving people more tips, resources to point them to, evidences, answering questions, and just helping them become better at defending the faith, not just also in what they need to know, but also how they should explain that to other people.
Yeah.
A lot of times the how can be more important than the what. To give an example, I just recorded a podcast today that went up for my podcast, the Council of Trent, C-O-U-N-S-E-L, available at TrenthornPodcast.com. I was talking about the church's teaching on suicide and how to defend it, because there's that news story going around about a priest in Michigan who was very insensitive in the homily he gave at the funeral for a teenager who had taken his own life. And so he was articulating the church's teachings, or at least some of them, such as the fact that suicide is an evil. Yeah. It can be a grave sin. But there's also factors like culpability and other things we have to bring into play. So we have to have proper nuance, proper sensitivity for people when we share the truth. It's not just having the right answers. It's knowing how to share them in the proper way so that they will be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And so I go on to that more at length. And anyone wants to hear that episode, it's actually posted now. They can check that out at TrenthornPodcast.com.
That's an interesting. I hadn't heard that story. Mm-hmm. I'm going to look that one up because there is this other thing too. We have to be very, very careful because people imitate suicide. That's a common thing.
It's been proven
not to glorify.
Yeah, it's called suicide contagion, and this is something sociologists and psychiatrists have known for quite a long time. That when a suicide occurs, and especially if a person is lionized or receives a lot of attention,
right,
because they have taken their own life, that can encourage other people who are not well, yeah, who have a mental illness, to believe that this is a good thing for them to do, that other people will lionize them, yeah, will be, finally, they'll now pay attention to me, finally, they'll care about me, you'll miss me when I'm gone. And it can feed into that distorted and dangerous kind of thinking.
Yeah.
I remember back in 2014, I was writing my article for Catholic Answers magazine when Robin Williams took his own life. And the Oscars tweeted an image of the genie from Aladdin that he provided the voice for.
Oh, yeah.
With the caption, "Genie, you're free."
Oh, that's not a message.
I think it was like the American Academy for the Prevention of Suicide said, if that's not crossing the line, it's extremely close to it.
Yeah, no, that's crossing the line.
Yeah, I would say so as well. That's an absurd thing to say, that encourages other people that you'll find happiness and peace by resorting to suicide, which is, as people often say, a permanent solution to a temporary problem. Yeah. Now, how to communicate that?
Yeah, I got to find out about what this priest said, because I don't know about that.
Yeah, the homily was allegedly posted online. I went through it a little bit on my show. But as Layla Miller and I talk about in our book, Made This Way, this occurs for other issues as well. Layla talks about the macro and the micro. So macro is the big picture, how you explain about an issue to someone, such as I share on social media the church's teaching on transgender identity.
Okay.
But the micro is how we relate person to person in different circumstances. Yeah. So what I say online about transgender ideology, I'm not going to use those exact same words when I have a conversation with someone who identifies as being transgender.
Right.
Or the same thing with homosexuality, or even with suicide. If I was asking a talk, here, what is the church teaching on suicide? I will give one answer. I'll give the same content to someone who is struggling with a friend or a loved one who took their own life, but you're always going to go at it with different emphases and different sensitivities to them. It's like what St. Paul says in, I think it's 1 Corinthians chapter 9. He says, to the Jews I became a Jew, to the Greeks I became a Greek. I become all things to all men that I might win some over to Christ. And we have to do the same thing in our own apologetics and our own defenses of faith.
I got to get to a call real quick here, Trent. I don't think the caller has a lot of time, and he's been waiting for a while. So Christopher in Nashville, Tennessee, listening on the TuneIn radio app. We're glad you're here with us. I'm sorry I kept you waiting. Your question for Trent.
It's okay. Hi, Trent. My question, since the topic of the hour is how to be a better apologist, is how do you approach having a dialogue with somebody who is not only, I guess, obstinate in their ignorance about the teachings of Mother Church, but also they have the personality type to where they launch a huge volley of questions at you all at once, and you try to get through one of those questions, and then all of a sudden you've got two or three more, and you find yourself trying to swim out of a deeper and deeper queue of questions and not really making any positive progress. I mean, I'm out there to try to win hearts and minds.
Right.
And I don't feel like I'm effective in doing that if, sure. if the other person's just.
You're dealing with essentially the verbal hydra. In Greek mythology, if you cut off the hydra's head, two more grow in its place. So how do you kill something? I'm not talking, you know, I'm saying kill a bad argument in this case, if it just fractures into a bunch of different ones. There's other terms for this. The Christian apologist Greg Kokel calls this kind of person a steamroller. They just launch a volley of questions at you, and they're just trying to overwhelm you. So it really depends on the situation. Like when I get this in a public forum and other people are observing, sometimes, or even on radio, if someone does this to me, they'll have three or four questions. I might say, I tell you what, I'll make you a deal. You could do Monty Hall. I will either answer all five of these, and that's the end of our discussion, or we can pick one of them and go back and forth. I think when someone steamrolls or throws a bunch of questions at you, you should just gently shame them. You don't have to shame the person. Gently remind them you want to have a conversation. You want to have a dialogue, not a monologue, and you want to talk about one important thing. And so when they bring up a question, you answer it, and they jump to another topic. Remind them of that and say, well, I definitely want to talk about that, but I think we still need to resolve one thing on this particular issue that I want to make sure that we're clear on. Another term I have for this is called lily padding. It's like if you stand a frog's on a lily pad, it starts to sink. So before it goes fully under, he jumps to the other one. No, we need to get back on this one and show the lily pad you're on is not seaworthy. And I want that fact to be clearly demonstrated to you before we move on to some other kind of topic. So I might just you have to put up the guardrails and try to avoid the temptation to want to run down a rabbit trail someone throws up to say, wait, let's go back to this. And after we've done that, then we can address a lot of these other questions. So you might borrow some tricks if you've ever had to raise toddlers. You kind of have to do the same thing with them with the different requests they make. Is that helpful, or do you have any other thoughts or questions on that?
That is helpful. Sometimes the temptation to jump down that rabbit hole, like if they say something that maybe this is a debate tactic, I don't know, but like they'll say something that's just very clearly wrong, just easy, low-hanging fruit, just to sort of try to tempt you into not ever really making any positive progress on that.
Yeah, and so if you have someone that brings that up, you could say, well, let's put a pin in that. I really would like to address that. And it's hard as you grow as an apologist when you're talking to people. A lot of what you have to do, and this is just kind of mental exercises, is that the more you can read and write and practice your mental muscles, you'll be able to develop traits like keeping arguments slotted in one's head in kind of a queue to be able to address. So sometimes on air, you'll hear me talking to people, and you know, I'll say, you know, someone will, sometimes if they're angry, they'll kind of give a tirade. And there's a lot of things a person is mad about. The more you talk to people, and this is something that just really comes a lot by practice, the more and more you talk to people, you can say, okay, these are the three things that bother you. These are the three arguments you made. Let me address each one. And you learn in your mind how to be able to keep them. That way, you know, you want to talk about them, but you go at it in an order. So it's not chaotic. You say, I want to go through these three points instead of just jumping down whatever rabbit trail is thrown in front of you. And as I said, that just takes practice. So I would definitely recommend just getting out there, and you're always rusty at first, but just start talking to people. At the very least, ask them questions to make them defend their point of view. If they throw a bunch of questions at you, it should be fair game for them to answer your questions as well. So definitely, I hope that'll be helpful for you.
Thanks, Christopher. Thanks for those questions, and thanks for hanging around until we could get to that call. Trent Horn is our guest this hour. Our topic, becoming a better apologist. Another way you might say that is becoming a better defender of the faith. We need lots of people who can explain and defend the Catholic faith. It's not like the world is a little bit confused or even sometimes hostile to the Catholic faith, but still, we should... I was being ironic.
Facetious?
Facetious.
I think that was more facetious than ironic.
Oh my gosh, it's a minute and 12 seconds till I can be mean to you too, Trent.
I know.
All right, I'm just going to use that minute and 12 seconds by telling people they should go to TrentHornPodcast.com and find out all about a podcast called The Council of Trent. It's like 8 or 9 days a week now you're doing this thing. How many days a week are you?
The podcast is going 30 hours a day, 10 days a week.
So you just podcast everything that you do and then add a few hours of overlap.
Invent more time. Or if we
invent more time,
we'll run everything on metric time. And we will remember this podcast on April the 47th.
April the 47th.
On good old metric time.
So You talked about the suicide one that you got coming up, but yes. What are the things you got coming up, and how do you pick the topics?
Well, I try to pick topics. It depends. On Wednesdays, I usually talk about what I'm working on here at Catholic Answers. Right now, I'm talking about my new book, Counterfeit Christ, and I walk people through the chapters I'm writing and teach them a few things along the way. I also like to talk about what's going on in current events and being able to explain what the church teaches. So I talked about this issue of suicide because it's, you know, the church's teaching on it has been circulated in these articles. I'll probably later this week talk about the change in the Lord's Prayer and about Bible translation in general and how, you know, people say the Pope is rewriting the Word of God and say, well, no, that is not what he's doing. And we will certainly talk about
that. About how you translate it?
Yeah, talk about the principles behind translating Scripture and answering people's questions they have about that. And then on Fridays, we do kind of more free-for-all Fridays. We have fun, offbeat topics, sometimes science fiction and cultural and historical phenomena that I enjoy. Last Friday, I did a show called Don't Worry, Be Happy. And I was reading a great book by Robert Leahy called The Worry Cure. And it details cognitive therapy techniques to help defeat your worrying. Very practical tips I go through in the podcast. And so if anyone likes to check that out, they can go to trendhornpodcast.com. And if they're a premium subscriber, if they make a monthly donation, even as low as $5 a month, they get access to bonus features like sneak peeks of my new audiobook, Why We're Catholic, and access to other great content.
The Worry Cure is the name of the book you talked about?
The Worry Cure by Robert Leahy. And it ties well in because Jesus himself said, I think it's Matthew 6:27, how can worrying add even 1 minute, 1 cubit to your lifespan? It can't. God doesn't want us to worry. He doesn't want us to be anxious. Yet we still feel the temptation to do so. And I think there are very good practical steps one can take to avoid worrying. And so that's just, you know, on Fridays, I try to always make my shows on Council of Trent accessible, understandable, and something easy to share and relatable for people. And I think it's been going pretty well so far.
Council of Trent is where you find out all about Trent's podcast, and you can sign up for the podcast there. And so go visit councilofTrent.com. No.
Got questions? Visit us today at Catholic.com.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Morning Glory. It's Catholic from coast to coast.
God doesn't send anybody to hell. We choose hell. What God is doing is allowing our free will choice, because we have a choice. We can say yes or we can say no. He never wants us to say no. He always wants us to be in love with him. And people need to understand, after we die, you only got two choices, heaven or hell.
Beauty.
Smoking or non-smoking.
Exactly.
Harold Burke-Sivers joins Gloria Purvis and the Morning Glory team Monday, January 7th on EWTN Radio.
Did I hear that correctly? Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers is joining Gloria in the mornings. That is an amazing team. Those are two fantastic people. You got to get up really early here on the West Coast to hear that. I am going to get up and listen to that. That is a great show. Do you know Gloria Purvis and Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers? They're going to be on January 7th. It said they're going to do the morning show. It's called Morning Glory. I call it Morning Gloria, but now it's called Morning Glory. And I'm trying to talk really fast so that you won't get to say anything right now, because I know what you're going to say.
What am I going to say?
But I really am a fan of Deacon Harold Burke-Sivers.
I just have one word.
Gloria Purvis.
One word.
What?
One word.
No! Did I shout no
outro? I on appreciated the last? That you had an...
I'm ashamed of
you myself. Had an outburst because you gave the website for my podcast...
Mm-hmm.
And you said councilofTrent.com, yeah. Which is a correct redirect, C-O-U-N-S-E-L.
That's not what I'm supposed to say, though.
I find Trendhorn podcast is easier to remember. But either way, it would have been okay. It's not the end of the world.
I need the worry cure, apparently.
You need the worry cure. Or you can listen to the podcast Don't Worry, Be Happy from last Friday.
Okay.
But it was just so dramatic. It was just like even more so than the Darth Vader yell.
It was a little bit of...
No!
It was a little William Shatner, wasn't it?
No! No! Con!
All right, back to the phones. Wait, it's past 15 past, so I can start being mean to you now. Robert in Houston, Texas, listening on the Guadalupe Radio Network. You are up next with Trent Horn. Your question, please.
Hello, can you hear me?
We can. You sound great, actually.
Oh, thank you. Trent Horn, I'm a huge fan. So I was wondering, if we can reasonably conclude that the Catholic faith is true, and I believe we can, then what does that leave faith? Why do we need to have faith? Because we know that, you know, God, you know, exists. He sent his son Jesus to die and rise for us. And because of our reason, we know that anything that he says, we should do. And how do we, where does that leave room for faith? And, like, the reason why this, like, you know, goes with the topic is because when I'm talking with my mom a lot, she says, well, like, why do you need all this? You have faith. And I don't know. Just what do you have to say?
Sure. And Robert, I think that when people bring this up, they have a misunderstanding of what faith is. Faith is not a distinctly religious concept. Faith is just essentially trust. To say you have faith in something means that you trust it. So sometimes when there are, you know, I'm talking to atheists, they'll say, you know, I don't need faith. You know, I have reason. That faith is just a kind of magical religious sort of thinking that is blind, that is against reason or without reason. And that's not the case. For example, one can think of the song by George Michael, I've got to have faith, the faith, the faith. I've got to have faith, the faith, the faith. And Psy, of course, that is not a hymn, right?
That is not a hymn.
No, it is not a hymn.
I mean, George Michael is a hymn. But that's a different kind of hymn. The song is not a hymn.
It's not an H-Y-M-N.
Hymn.
A hymn. It is not a religious song. Faith is just a kind of trust. So paragraph 1814 of the Catechism says that faith, the theological virtue of faith, is trust that we have in God and in his promises. So the thing is, you can have evidence for a certain proposition, but you still have to have trust, the ability to live out that the proposition is true and to operate that you do really believe that. In my book, Why We're Catholic, I use this example, which I find is helpful for people who say, well, why do we need faith if we have reasons? Why do we need that? According to the United States Skydiving Association, the Parachute Association, you have about a 99.95% chance of surviving a skydiving jump. Skydiving is actually very, very safe. If you had all the evidence, you have the statistics, you're going to live, you see your parachute packed, you see everything, and you're up in the plane, you have a ton of evidence that you are going to be fine. Yet, you are still probably apprehensive when you're standing at the door of the plane ready to jump. You still have to make that quote-unquote leap of faith. You still have to trust in that. You still have to operate with the will to say, yes, this is true, and I'm going to trust it. I'm going to act upon that. And so what the Catechism also says is that God chose, he did reveal things to us by divine revelation, but he also wanted to give us motives of credibility, is what you find in church documents in the Catechism. So we're also given reasons to be able to show that, yes, this is reasonable, there is evidence, this is something worth putting our faith or our trust in. So they go hand in hand, because you can have a lot of reason and evidence, and people will still ignore it. They'll choose to ignore it, dissuade it, not care about it. You can give someone all the evidence in the world that eating fast food at every meal and not exercising is bad for them. They could have all that evidence and still just ignore it and not choose to live in that way, not make an act of faith to change their life. And I think that's the same thing with how faith and reason interplay in what we believe. So that's one way I would look at it. Is that helpful, or would you like any clarification on any of the points?
That's very helpful. And can I just ask this real quick? I really enjoy watching you debate people like Dan Barker or James White. Do you have any other debates planned?
I don't have any other debates planned, actually. You know, it's funny. People ask me to debate certain people here and there, but I usually don't go and seek out debates. Debates are very time intensive. I've kind of, over the past 6 years, I've kind of left it up to God for debates to kind of find their way to me. I also like it when a third party wants to do a debate, invites me and someone else. That way there's kind of a neutral party that's involved. So I don't have any that are lined up, but I'm always open. If you or anyone else would like me to debate someone and they have a suitable platform and it would be a good topic and a good discussion, I'm always interested. So you can always email us, the seminars department at Catholic Answers, and we love setting up debates. So whether it's with an atheist or Protestant or who knows, really? Muslim, who knows what it could be. I'm
CatholicAnswerSpeakers.com is where you can make that contact. So CatholicAnswerSpeakers.com.
Yeah, go to CatholicAnswerSpeakers.com and you can just check under my speaking box. I think there is actually a box for debate and they could check that and fill
out
what you want.
I want to debate you, Trent.
Sure. Go, we can go
I'm
right
not
ahead.
Scared of you at all.
Is that what is that the proposition you want to debate?
No,
or
the proposition. Star Trek is better than Star Wars.
See, I wouldn't even I wouldn't agree to a debate like that in the first place because the question isn't a fair one. Star Trek and Star Wars, really the only thing they have in common is they have the word star in it and they're in space. So it's it wouldn't be a fair comparison nor a fair debate. So
no,
people can
Woody
suggest
Harrelson
a debate.
Is in both of them.
Woody Harrelson, oh, is in both of them?
I'm just kidding. No, he's not really. That's why I could win a debate. I know so much more about it than you do.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go to Taylor in Nashville, Tennessee, listening on the Catholic Answers app. I will debate you on
now
this.
You could, now Kirk,
I'm not scared of you.
Now, Kirk versus Picard, you can debate that. That's a fair debate to have.
Really?
Yes, it is.
Well, see, if someone challenges you to a debate and then you just say, well, it's not a fair debate, then that's I feel that's cowardice on
it's
your part.
It's prudence.
Prudence. All right, fair enough. I'll debate you on Kirk versus Picard. Kirk is clearly better. Let's go to Taylor.
Make it so.
In Nashville, Tennessee, listening on the Catholic Answers app. Taylor, your question for Trent.
Hey guys, thanks for taking the call. My husband is in RCIA right now, and the program's just very dry. They just show a 45-minute video each week, and there's absolutely zero discussion. It's just not challenging or engaging or drawing him towards the church at all. And so I'm pretty passionate about my faith and about the Catholic Church, and I would personally love to run this program. I don't know if a lay person is allowed to do that. So my question is just to get your thoughts on how I can respectfully ask to help with or take over this program, like starting immediately so I can do it while my husband's in it.
Right.
Without offending the priest or deacon.
Taylor, who currently runs the RCIA program?
The deacon.
Okay. Well, I think that whenever we're involved in a situation like this where we feel people's needs, whether it's spiritual, physical, emotional, that their needs are not being met, it's always good to reflect the principle of subsidiarity. So you shouldn't go over people's heads unless absolutely necessary. I'll elaborate more on what that would mean in this context, though, when we come back from this break.
Taylor, I hope you can hang on. We'll get to the rest of that right after this on Catholic Answers Live. We're talking with Trent Horn this hour. Trent, the author of many, many things and an apologist here at Catholic Answers. And we're talking about how to be a better apologist. More of that right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Author Mark McNeil spent years in the Oneness Pentecostal movement, praying in its lively services, zealously spreading its unconventional teachings, and rejecting mainstream Christianity as misguided. Then he left it all behind. All in the Name is the story of a man who believed he was among an elite group of believers who followed the true faith when so many others had strayed. But an inquisitive mind, careful study, and the action of the Holy Spirit finally led Mark out of Oneness Pentecostalism and into the Catholic Church. This is an inspiring conversion story you won't want to miss. It's a faith strengthener for Catholics and an intriguing challenge to those who deny the doctrine of the Trinity. Order your copy of All in the Name today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Christmas is coming, and with Advent already upon us, we want to make sure you know about our annual Christmas sale with hundreds of great faith-building resources all on sale at 20% off when you enter promo code CALIVE18 at checkout. With great new resources by Jimmy Akin, Trent Horn, Christopher Check, and other great Catholic teachers, there's simply no better time to stock up on resources to build up your faith and the faith of those around you. Phone 888-291-8000 or go to shop.catholic.com right now to take advantage of what is truly the best Catholic sale on the internet, going on now through the end of the year. And remember, enter promo code CALIVE18 at checkout to save 20% on hundreds of great resources throughout the store.
Tomorrow on More to Life, the life you were meant to live.
We'll look at how the theology of the body can help you live a more abundant life. That's tomorrow on More to Life, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 Central on EWTN Radio. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. Trent Horn is our guest, and we're talking about how to be a better apologist this hour. And when we left, we were speaking with Taylor, or you were responding to Taylor, who wants to help out at her husband or take over or do something to salvage her husband's RCIA class. I'm guessing probably because she loves her husband and she loves her Catholic faith.
Right.
And she wants it to be well presented. And not all RCIA classes are created equal.
No, they are not. And so it is unfortunate there isn't a standard set of expectations or uniform curricula for RCIA. In some cases, you've got programs that are run very well. You have priests who are very knowledgeable and work with catechumens to guide them to the faith. And other times, you have people who, in the worst case scenarios, they even distort church teaching on things like contraception or baptism to make the faith more palatable to people. That way, they will convert. And yet, what they've presented to them is a distortion of Catholic teaching.
Yeah.
So, Taylor, before we went to the break, you said that your husband's in the program and feels kind of dry. There's a deacon who currently runs the program now. Is your concern more that he's missing things that are important or presenting things that are in error?
I don't think there's anything being presented in error. It's just that there's no passion behind there's no discussion. So it's just a video. Everybody goes home. So my husband doesn't feel that he's really learning much I don't know. They're really just learning history about the church more than what we're currently, mm-hmm. Teaching and why be a Catholic, if that makes sense.
Okay. How many people are in the RCIA program right now?
I think there's five or six.
Five or six. Okay. Because I might be able to send you a gift then that might be helpful in your position, I would like to do. I would recommend first you could talk to your husband and, hear this from him. And then see also, he could also talk with other people who are in the RCIA program and ask them, hey, what have you thought of it so far? And see if they kind of feel the same way or if they're all okay with everything, you won't have a lot of room for traction on this. But if they say, oh, they would love discussion or love things like this too, when you have their opinions as well, you or your husband can go to the deacon and say, hey, we were wondering if we could do just a little bit more when we meet each week because we'd like to really know, why we should be Catholic or this part of the church's teaching. And so you could even go with your husband and say, some people in the class would like to maybe have a little bit more. You always have to affirm people to find what is good, find something affirmable in what the deacon is doing. You don't want to come off as an enemy who is here to commit a hostile takeover of his RCIA program. So affirm things that are going well. And then say, I think, my husband has talked to other people, they would love to have a little bit more on this or that. Would you be interested in providing that? Or I'd be happy to even come in to lead a discussion or, help out because I just want to be able to serve. And wherever there's a need, I'm happy to help. I think that's the best attitude to come into this with. If you're rebuffed, then you could always go one rung above to the director of religious education or to the priest and say, hey, I'm just a little bit concerned that there's some people feeling like their spiritual needs aren't being met in the RCIA program. I'm very happy for what Deacon so-and-so has been offering, but I think there's just so much more that would be helpful for them. And I'd love to step in to be able to offer it, not to replace him, but to supplement. And you can go there, or if that's not possible, you can always offer. I was wondering if I could do just a meeting, reserve a room at the parish after the RCIA class ends, or you could even go out with the group, take them to a Starbucks or to a restaurant or something. And, you could call it your own informal group. And you can invite other people as well, people who aren't catechumens. You could call it going deeper or something like that. So you wouldn't create something that's not necessarily, it's not a competitor to your parish's RCIA program, but the idea of an informal group for lay people to gather, talk about theology and go deeper in their faith if you can't augment the currently existing RCIA program. Those, I think, would be your best options. And one way you could do that, just to go deeper and make it easier, you could go through my book, Why We're Catholic. The chapters are very, very short. They're only about five or six pages. You could give one to each person, as well as anyone else who might join you, and just kind of make it a book study. So especially if you offered it up to other people in the parish, then it doesn't look like you're trying to create a competitive program. You just want to create something that serves other people's needs and interests. And so if you do stay on the line, Taylor, I will send you a case of that. I will send you a whole case because I wish every RCIA program had a case of these things. I wish I had this book when I was in RCIA. So that might be some advice that, that I would recommend. Is that helpful, or do you have any other questions?
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate your thoughts and very helpful.
Okay, thanks, good. Taylor. Stay on the line, give us your address, and we will get that sent off to you.
I think, I don't know about going deeper as a title. I would do something like a different RCIA that's even better than the one Deacon is doing. What do you think about that?
Yeah, that's,
I think it's a more descriptive title.
It is a more inflammatory one, that's for sure. So you could always...
Now I got to go look
is it,
up
is it inflammatory? I think that's the same thing as flammatory.
Flammatory and inflammatory are the same?
I think they are.
I'm taking an anti-inflammatory right now because my back's hurting. Let's go to Philip in Fulton, Missouri, listening on the Covenant Radio Network. Awesome, Philip. Your question for Trent Horn.
Okay, my question, well, thanks for taking the call, is how to defend Vatican II and the people who suggest that, an apostasy has been committed. Specifically, not a better argument, but a different argument than the passage in the Bible that states the gates of hell will not prevail against my church.
Okay, Philip, hang on just a second, because your connection is weak. So I just want to review it, and you tell me, yeah, that's what I want to ask about. So people attack the Second Vatican Council. You want a way to defend the council. People say that the council was an apostasy, and you want a good defense of the council, and one that is that's even better than
when Jesus said the gates of hell shall not prevail against the church.
Philip, did I get it all right?
I don't know if it's better, but just different. But yeah,
different.
Okay, got it. You want?
Well, I think what I would do here, Philip, is always when being an apologist, when you're defending the Catholic faith, including for people who call themselves Catholic but distort the church's teachings or try to undermine them, that we should always look at our tactics and how we go about the conversations. So sometimes when we're in these situations, we assume the defensive. We think, oh, okay, this person made a charge, so I've got to offer a full-fledged defense. Someone says, the Catholic Church apostatized after the Second Vatican Council, fell into heresy, the Second Vatican Council is not a valid council. People will say that, and we think, oh, I got to show, well, here's how you can know that the church could never fall away. You know, Matthew 16, the gates of hell, or here's all the reasons that we should believe in the Second Vatican Council and the answers to arguments people raise. Instead, we should just turn the question around and say, well, why should I believe that? And usually they say, well, the church changed its teachings, changed the liturgy, for example. So now liturgy is in the vernacular, or changed teachings on things like religious liberty. So then you should just ask another question. Well, what do you mean? Why can't the church change some of its teachings? It's simply not true that all teachings of the church are static and cannot be changed. Only some teachings are infallible or irreformable. So I would ask this person the questions, why should I believe the church apostatized? If you say, well, it's because the church changed its teachings, what's wrong with that? Well, the church can't change. Well, who says all of the things the church teaches are of equal authority and are irreformable or infallible? Are you saying everything the church teaches is infallible? Because that's not what the church teaches in its own documents. So a great book then I would recommend that if you're dealing with this with people would be a new book by my colleague Jimmy Akin called Teaching with Authority. That way you can explain, well, here is how the church teaches. Here is when the church teaches irreformable, infallible matters, and here is where the church teaches or outlines things that can change. So aspects of the liturgy can change. The liturgy, you can change how it is celebrated. You can retain or dispose certain customs or traditions. Liturgy wasn't always done in Latin, for example. It was one time done, in Greek in the early church, or in Aramaic, or in Hebrew. So these are the kinds of things you can bring up. So when someone brings this up and attacks the church saying it committed this apostasy after Vatican II, challenge them to defend that really grave charge against the church. And then I think we can put forward to say, why should I believe this when Jesus says the church will not fall away? If the church has apostatized and time is growing ever since that council, soon we're only going to have quote unquote invalid bishops and cardinals who are ordained after this council. Are you saying there's no Catholic church anymore anywhere? So those are some of the routes that I might take in my discussions. Is that helpful for you?
Yes, that's helpful. What was the name of the book?
The name of the book is Teaching with Authority by Jimmy Akin. It's a new title of Catholic Answers. Very, very good book. I also interviewed Jimmy about the book. If you want to listen to a little bit of a snippet about that, at my website at trendhornpodcast.com. It was last Tuesday's interview.
Okay. All right.
All right. You interviewed Jimmy, huh? I thought I do the interviewing around here. I thought that was my job. That's in my job title.
Someone can have more than one job, and other people can do the same job without threatening another person's job. For example, Cy, if you want to throw in some apologetic tidbits on the show, I am more than welcome to hear that. That doesn't defray from me being an apologist.
I'm going to tell you my tip, apologetics tip.
Go right ahead.
Okay? Because I use this all the time on this very program.
Okay.
And I'm going to see what you think about it.
Okay.
And people will say to me sometimes, I don't know how you stay so calm when some of these questions are so challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And here's what I do.
Okay.
The person asks a question, and I find it very challenging, and the listener is like, well, how are they going to answer this one? And then I go, what do you think, Trent? And then I find that works.
That is a very useful tip in its application.
Works for
but
me.
But
I think everyone should use it.
Its applicability, unfortunately, I think is very, very narrow. I think it would only be very helpful for people who are in close proximity to Trent Horn, which is a small circle of people.
I think it should be bigger. I think everybody should just right next to you all the time when they're doing an apology. Just go, what do you think, Trent? But I will say, it doesn't always work because sometimes you're not here. So then I'll say, what do you think, Jimmy? Or if Jimmy's not around, what do you think, Carlo? I find that...
You know what would be helpful? When somebody asks a question like that, you can reply to them and ask them, what do you think about this? How do you know that's true? What would it take you to change your mind on this issue? So I think you're on the right track with asking questions, but for the broadest applicability, you should ask questions of your interlocutor. Of your interlocutor. Which is a fancy term for the guy asking you a bunch of questions.
That sounds very Socratic, what you have just described. Hey, right now, all of our digital products, ebooks, e-magazines, and MP3s, some of which are by Trent Horn, are 50% off. It actually ends at midnight tonight. They've been having so many crazy sales, though, coming up towards Christmas. So there'll probably be another big one tomorrow. I'm just saying. I don't think I'm supposed to say that, but there probably will be. But also, that promo code CALIVE18 still works for 30% off on books, DVDs, CDs, a whole bunch of stuff at shop.catholic.com. And all 71 of Trent's various books are on sale there. Go to shop.catholic.com and use the promo code CALIVE18.
Hello, this is Archbishop Alexander Sample of the Archdiocese of Portland in Oregon. Keep that dial right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their faith and values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
We need EWTN Radio for the reason that Mother Angelica founded this entire enterprise. She always saw this as a spiritual growth network. It was to be an enterprise in media that reached people in all aspects of their life. She saw this as a holistic approach to reaching the whole person in the middle of the world and bringing them truth and life.
Raymond Arroyo thinks Catholic radio is important. So should you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn is our guest, and that means we're having fun, learning stuff, having a good time. And the topic today, how to be a better apologist, because that's Trent's professional job. He's a professional apologist defending and explaining the Catholic faith, and he's happy to share what he knows with you. The number 888-318-7884. The podcast, I'm going to just say this correctly this time so that I get this out of my system. If you want to know all about Trent's podcast, just go to TrentHornPodcast.com.
That is a URL that does work.
It's the easiest one to remember, TrentHornPodcast.com. I got a question for you, and I'm connecting this to your most recent book. So before I go back to another caller, and this is quite sincere. It's a real serious. I'm not being goofy because I've been very goofy today. And That's that was, please stop that, Trent. I'm trying not to be goofy. Okay, so the question is, and it's connected to your book, Made This Way, because it's about explaining tough moral issues, how to explain tough moral issues. There is this, when you want to stand up for the truth, especially on moral issues today, you often get the hater response. And it might be explicit that someone says, well, I just think that you know, that's an old way of thinking. You're stuck in old ways of thinking that are rooted in hate and intolerance and all that kind of thing. Or it might just be implicit, like the roll of the eyes, I don't have time for your nonsense. So how do I be a better apologist in those situations?
Well, I think in those situations, you can ask the other person. I sometimes in these conversations take a strategy of asking, please help me. You know, it's kind of the approach, I could be totally wrong about these kinds of things.
Oh.
So I think, though, that there is a difference between men and women, and that men just aren't women. I know some people might say that I'm a hater if the topic of transgender ideology comes up, but I mean, that just seems obvious to me. I don't want to be malicious. I don't wish for harm to anyone, but I just can't get over what seems to be true to me, that men and women are different and men are not women and vice versa. Can you help me see what I'm not getting so I can stop being a hater? So there, you say, okay, then this person will try to explain, but I think that when they try to articulate their view, because it's going to be so incoherent, they're going to stumble over themselves or resort to platitudes like, well, we should just respect everybody and we should just respect what everybody believes and what they want to do. I'll say, okay, but how does that make sense then? Because you're saying that I'm a hater or you don't like what I'm saying. It sounds like you're not respectful of what I believe. So I don't think you really believe we should respect what everybody believes.
Yeah, right.
So how does that work? And also help me see, what was I exactly wrong about men and women or the use of our sexual faculties or about life in the womb? What was I not understanding at that point? Can you help me with this? And then you're not the hater, you're the learner. And it's up to this person to correct you. But if they have an incoherent worldview, it might be very difficult for them to do that. I also think it's helpful in these situations if someone were to say, and I get this label thrown at me, you know, all the time, that, you know, you're like, my books peddle hate. I'll say, well, how? Can you give me a specific example?
Right.
So if you're a hater, ask the person for specifics. What specific thing do I do that exemplifies hate, that is a hateful action or a hateful belief? Please give me a specific so I can see if you're right about this. And then ask more follow-up questions like, so believing that a certain moral behavior is wrong, is hateful, why? I mean, in some cases it could be hateful. It could be based out of some sheer kind of animus. You know, if somebody said, I don't think blacks and whites should intermarry, I might ask them, why do you think that? And I say, well, because I don't want the race to be polluted. And I say, well, why? What is wrong with white people and black people getting married and having interracial children? Well, because I think, and usually the conversations will not be this erudite or, you know, this simplistic. Well, I believe that African Americans are subhuman. I'll say, well, that, do you hate these individuals? I mean, that sounds racist to me if you just say a group of human beings are subhuman. So there, in that moral instance, we can drill down and we can actually find the hate. I agree there's hate out there. There's definitely.
Right.
So you can find common ground with the person to say, yeah, I agree there's people that hate other people. There's people who hate organizations. There's people who hate the Catholic Church, who hate priests, there's people who hate Jews, who hate all kinds of people. But how does that show that just because two people have something in common, it doesn't mean they're the same thing? So just because some racists may hate certain groups of people getting married, like interracial groups of people, it doesn't follow that anyone who has a moral objection to certain kinds of marriages is on par with someone who is a racist that hates interracial marriage. That was a common card, that is an objection that's thrown at people who object to so-called same-sex marriage.
Yeah.
To say, well, look, you are just like those racists, those haters who didn't want blacks and whites to get married, is the reason you don't want two men or two women to get married. And the rejoinder is, no, it's not the same at all. When it came to interracial marriage, racists who opposed interracial marriage knew these were real marriages. They hated the idea of the races coming together.
Yeah,
So they wanted to keep the races apart. They wanted to keep men and women apart in valid marriages. Opposition to so-called same-sex marriage is not about keeping men and women apart. It is about uniting men and women together in what marriage actually is. It's not hateful to uphold marriage as a very specific institution with very specific goals for society. Yeah. And so you just have to have these conversations, and just when people are mad at you or they throw out the hate, you know, hater, things like that, you just have to say, well, just let it roll off your back, kind of. Say, okay, you kind of have a...
It's hard to let it roll off your back.
It sure is. It takes practice and takes grace and prayer, and that's why we need a robust spiritual life so that we have grace working through us,
right,
that we can take these verbal whippings, these verbal scourgings, just like Jesus took real scourgings.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah.
And then we can have... And so I think, though, when people throw these charges at us and they're very upset, nonplussed is kind of a good response, or even deadpan. Like, well, why do you mean that I'm hateful? Not, how can you say I'm hateful? How could you say something like that? That's pouring gas on the fire.
Yeah.
But if you say, well, so why do you think that I hate these people? I'm having a hard time understanding this. Just because I say, if I say a group of people are doing something that's immoral, doesn't mean that I hate them.
Yeah.
How does that follow? You probably think that I'm doing something immoral doesn't mean you hate me. You might think this other group, we both agree, like polygamists, for example, that's a sexual immorality. It doesn't mean we hate these individuals.
Right, right.
One last thing on the hater objection is you could say, well, you know, this comes up. If you say people who are gay are going to hell, which is not a way that I would ever phrase it, I would say that those who knowingly reject God's plan for their sexuality do harm to their souls, and that could mean they could die apart from God's grace and friendship. And that's for anyone, whether you identify as straight, gay, or whatever.
Right.
But if you're saying, these people who identify as LGBT, if you're saying that what they're doing is wrong or that it's a sin and you could go to hell, well, then you're hateful if you say they might go to hell engaging in this behavior. And a good way to challenge that is to say, well, how does that follow? If I really hated these people and I really believed this, if I really hated a group of people,
I would just like rub my hands like Snidely Whiplash and look forward to them going to hell.
Yeah,
if I hated them.
You're kind of a Pontius Pilate routine here. You know, I wash my hands of this. That if you hated a group of people, but you also believed that their activities would damn them for all eternity, then yeah, logically, you just wouldn't say anything.
Yeah.
Why would you say anything? You would just, you know, if your worst enemy was walking towards a cliff, would you say to him, turn around, you're going to fall off that cliff? If you hate it, if you were a malicious person that hated that guy, you just let him keep walking.
No, I'd call out to you, Trent.
Oh, well, that's good. That's good to hear, Si. It's good to hear. Is that payback? Because I always kill you in the philosophy examples.
You do kill me a lot on that. But I want to keep going through these objections because I think they do help people to be better apologists. So sometimes I got to take your whipping. That's part of what you're saying. Like when people say mean things about you, like you're a hater and that, you just got to take it. Now you might begin a Socratic dialogue with them about what.
When someone needs to vent, sometimes you have to let them vent. Say, yes. Okay, all right, if whatever you want to say is fine, but why do you think that?
But here's one that I keep hearing about, and I realize there's tremendous misuse of science. But I hear this. I even saw an entire opinion piece in the New York Times that claimed this because you talked about the transgender thing. Look, science has discovered that gender and sex are not the same thing. So you can be a man physically, but your gender is woman. That's science, Trent.
Well, science, and that what's funny here is we can enlist our atheist friends to help us with this because they're always wanting scientific evidence for God, which is usually something that's repeatable, demonstrable, deals with matter and energy within the space-time universe. So if it's something that's scientific, you should be able to present it to me to observe. Yet gender seems to be an immaterial concept. Now, science can study concepts. Sociologists study human behavior, human attitudes, how we behave. But really, that's not a scientific question about science and gender and their meaning. Those are philosophical questions about the human person. So science can't discover gender any more than science could discover value or faith itself. Science, these aren't material things within the world that science studies. Now, science can study people of faith or how people, what they believe about gender. But at the end of the day, we should say that when it comes to science and gender, these are philosophical categories people create.
Yeah.
And I would say, yeah, they do refer to real things. So yes, there is sex. There is the biological makeup of a human being. And then there is a person's conception of their own sex. I don't disagree with that at all, that we can see, okay, here's a person. He identifies himself this way. So and so science could give us a description of biological sex, and science could tabulate a person's testimony about their own sex, and we could call that gender. Sure, science can give us all that, but science cannot tell us, when it comes to the category man or woman, what decides that, sex or gender? That is not a scientific question. We make a philosophical judgment, oh, well, it's gender that determines if you're a man or a woman, not sex. That because before 1965, not only was it reversed, gender didn't apply to human beings. So what's going on here is, yeah, there's gender and there's sex, and science may even be able to show, and what the New York Times and others will bring up is, well, in people who identify as the other sex, yeah, whose gender is of the other sex, you might find brain parts of their brain that resemble that other
sex. The opposite sex, yeah.
That resemble the opposite sex. Now, first, this already assumes the natural view there's men and women, and that's biological. You say their brain resembles what?
Oh, right,
so,
yeah.
And then you could say, so what? That's only a sign of a brain injury that leads to an identity disorder, not that they really do belong to the other sex.
It's a lot to unpack, though, man. We got to keep doing this.
And we unpack it a lot in my book, Made This Way, with Layla Miller, if you need more on that, everyone.
Layla wrote a fine book, Made This Way, and Trent put his name on it. You can get that at shop.catholic.com as well. Trent Horn, thanks for helping us think through how to be a better apologist.
Psychel it. It was a pleasure.
Trent Horn.
Psychel it.
Trent Horn, your podcast is Council of Trent, and you can find out all about it by going to trenthornpodcast.com, in case you were wondering, Trent.
Thank you very much.
Psychel it. 2 hours of open forum tomorrow on Catholic Answers Live. See you then, God willing.
Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by Jack Kane Ford. Find your next Ford Tough vehicle at caneford.com. Woodhill Community Center. Have a hand in the heart of the city. Support their mission with your donations at woodhillcommunitycenter.org. Toyota in Nicholasville Superstore. Online consultants are standing by right now to help you find your next Toyota. Visit Toyota on nicholasville.com. Lexus of Lexington, home of the best-selling Lexus IS. Find yours today at lexusoflexington.com.